Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 21. My guest today is Dr. Tracy Brower. Tracy shares insights on how corporations are supporting work-life integration and how corporate office design and third space design can support work-life integration. And she uses her experience to share some suggestions on how to use research and insights to design better workspaces. As our industry continues to grow, people will vote with their feet and choose workplaces in which they can do their best work and bring their best selves to work. And many of us are on a mission to create those winning spaces. So I found the ideas that Tracy shared in her book and in our conversation today to be highly relevant. Dr. Brower is a work environment sociologist and global vice president of workplace vitality for Mars Drinks. She is the author of Bring Work to Life by Bringing Life to Work, a guide for leaders and organizations, which focuses on work-life integration and abundance. Over her career, Tracy has had the opportunity to engage with a wide range of organizations, including many of the Fortune 500. She is a three-time recipient of the Coronet Luminary Award for speaking and a recipient of the University of Houston Alexander Real Estate Innovative Practices Award. Tracy has also taught university courses in management and organizational effectiveness. I'm honored to have Tracy join me today. Please enjoy our conversation. Tracy, thank you so much for being my guest today. I'm really looking forward to talking to you. So Tracy is the author of Bringing Work to Life by Bringing Life to Work, and we'll include links to the book. You can buy it on Amazon in the show notes, and the show notes will be at everythingcoworking.com/21. So Tracy authored this book, and this is kind of her based on her life's work, and I'm going to let her talk about that a little bit, but I'm really excited because I think a lot of the themes that surround your work and the book are really relevant to what shared space owners and co-working space owners and people who are thinking about the future of work are thinking about in terms of the culture that we create, the space we design, and the way we are a solution for work-life integration. So I'm excited to chat a little bit more. So Tracy, tell us about yourself and about your work and the force behind writing your book. I'll let you dive right in.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to talk to you as well, because I think that, like you said, co-working spaces and shared spaces end up being a really important part of work life and work life integration. So where this came from, you know, I was living the dream. I guess I still am, wife and mother and professional and student and connected with my community. And of course, there's all this press right now on work-life balance. And I just felt like that paradigm isn't helpful and isn't serving us, and that there must be an alternative to that. So when I was in my PhD program, I really looked at researching companies. How were they doing this thing called work life? What was working really well? What was working less well? I talked to leaders. I really looked into what are all the ways that we can think about work life, and does work life integration matter to the bottom line? And so I really spent a lot of time kind of delving into that and found that there were some things I thought were sort of interesting. And so that was where the book came from. And I think for me, the alternative to work-life balance is thinking about work-life integration. Like, we still get boundaries and we still get to make our own choices, but work is part of life and part of a full life. And if we start with the idea that we can have it all and we don't have to trade off in this sort of balancing act, that we get to more creative solutions and we can get to places where we feel a great sense of abundance and fulfillment.
So what does work life look like in terms of where and when people work based on mm-hmm. your experiences and your research?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think it's interesting to think about what's happening today, right? And then what's going to be happening in 5 years or so. And so we can sort of talk about both elements of that. I think, you know, work is changing, workplace is changing, workers are changing. And one of the things that I think is really interesting is to think about the fluidity of our work and our lives. So increasingly, we see less boundaries between work and life because of the influence of mobility and technology. But even from a project standpoint, we see more and more of a free agent model, right? Where people are flowing between projects, flowing between work. Sometimes they're doing that within a corporate environment. Sometimes they're doing that between corporate environments. Sometimes they're doing that as free agents. And so today, I think we're seeing this huge rise, as you know, of third places, like, you know, places that are accidental places where we work, like Starbucks, for example, or fourth places like co-working spaces. But I think there's a great opportunity for corporations as well, corporations that are setting outposts for people so that they're still part of the corporate environment, but they're getting an experience where they can be more convenient or work remotely now and then. And so companies really sort of embracing place. And I think the paradox of place is important to talk about here, that the less need we have to come to work in order to do work, the more important the place is, right? So we want to be able to have a place that competes with the richness of the urban world, or competes with the home office, or competes with the third or fourth place, in whatever way it can create a destination and have people there who are engaged and excited and energized to be there.
Yeah, that was one of the sections in your book that I put a little bookmark on, because I thought that that theme really presents itself often these days. I think when corporations are starting to really focus on this challenge of the work-life integration and how to, you know, shape policies and space and culture to address that. And, you know, you talked about it in your book, and I hear that coming from other folks who are working on the same concept, which is, you know, right, if you provide some flexibility and people have choice, there are a lot of really good, easy, compelling options out there, you know, but how do you create a place at the headquarters or at the local office that's really compelling to bring people together? Because that's still really important too, the face-to-face component. And it's funny, at first I sort of questioned when this came up. I think it was the woman from Microsoft who I spoke at a work tech conference this year. And, you know, people were talking about, well, what do you do in the workplace? And there are lots of things you can do in terms of creating really productive, appropriate, specific workplace types for the type of work that people need to do on any given day. But one of the really, you know, important pieces is the coffee bar. And you talk about that in your book as well, is that, you know, being a community driver and a collaboration driver and a meeting place driver, and making sure that, you know, what you are offering at the corporate office kind of is as good as what people can get at a coffee shop or a co-working space.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and I think it's so interesting to think about the attributes of the space that work really well, whether it's within the corporate environment or whether it's in a co-working space or a shared space. Those are the places that people want to be. And, you know, some of the research that I've looked at suggests that it has everything to do with information exchange and social connections, right? We're social beings and work is fundamentally social. So we want to be in places where we can be with other people. And sometimes that means we're working independently, but we're in a place with other people present as well. Or we're in a place where we can feel inspired and feel a sense of creativity, or we're in a place where we can get great refreshments, where we can connect with people over coffee. You know, one of the things that we've noticed is that when you're at like a coffee bar, for example, and you're standing in a line, you're sort of queuing up vertically, you tend to interact with your device. But when you're standing more like at a coffee bar in almost like a semicircle or along the bar sideways, almost horizontally, you end up getting a lot more discussions and interaction. And so whether you're in a shared space or a corporate space, there's a great opportunity to just provide places that foster people bumping into each other and connecting. Because there's so much research on creativity and innovation And the crux of creativity and innovation is often really different ideas coming together. And when those really different ideas come together is when we find something really new and interesting. And that's about connections between people and thinking about each of us with our own sort of creative, unique buckets of skill and perspective, and being able to connect those in a shared space or co-working space or a corporation is really important.
Yep. And you're right. I mean, that's a really subtle insight about the, you know, the line versus the semicircle or kind of facing, I mean, that can make a huge impact on how people are interacting and what the outcome of that is, which is, I think we're learning a lot about applying those insights to space design.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think what's really interesting is to look at some of the trends that are going on, right? So the working contract is changing so much. The expectations, I think, that workers have of their company, because, you know, there's such a, I think such a scarcity of great resources right now. And we know that that's going to become even more scarce. So people are voting with their feet to a greater and greater extent. So they want places where they have a sense of work-life fulfillment and work-life support. But the working contract is changing. And then, you know, the interesting thing is that we are seeing shifts in both communication and transportation. And if you look at big shifts over time, they tend to be in moments where there's a shift in transportation and communication at the same time. So you think about sort of 5 years from now, there's a lot of research that suggests that we will have self-driving cars, we'll have more mass transit in the U.S. as compared with other places in the globe. So transportation is changing and technology is changing to support our communication, right? So over time, that will become more and more fluid, and communication will be more and more something that we don't have to think as consciously about. We'll just be able to connect without all of the sort of bumps in the road that often occur. And I think those really create some new and interesting ways to think about the way we'll be working and the way that we'll think about the workplace. So we may literally have less dialogue about it, because it will be something that's just understood. We work in different places at different times, in different ways all the time. And while that is part of our dialogue today, because it's new to us, it will become potentially less part of our dialogue. And I think, you know, workplace is going to become so much more holistic, right? Like your example of the woman who spoke from Microsoft about kind of refreshments and everything. I think we're going to more and more see more light and opportunities to connect and be creative. We're going to think more about sort of the traffic flow within environments, to think about all the ways that we support people bringing their whole selves to work, not just in terms of amenities like dry cleaning or daycare, but also in terms of food and beverage and refreshments and opportunities for challenge and learning, the impact of leaders in the space. I think that holistic look at work will be an interesting one as well.
Yeah, the whole self to work theme, I think, is so interesting. And, you know, talking about sort of the hierarchy of people's needs and feeling a sense of purpose and a sense of self. And the HBR, that Harvard Business Review article on why people thrive in co-working spaces, talked about one of their insights or theories being that even a corporate person working in a co-working environment may have more opportunity to talk about their work and to explain what they do, which makes them feel more unique and interesting, which makes them feel better about the work they do, you know, than the opportunities they might have to do those things at the corporate office. Although some of the things that you're talking about in terms of physical work environments can also support that, like having a central coffee bar where people are interacting who don't usually interact. Or I thought you gave some interesting examples in your book. Actually, one of them I thought was I kind of made a note and thought, I wonder if we could try that. And I think this was a company that you had worked with in your consulting business, but the idea that you would give, when people walk in the morning, you would give someone a name of a person and they had to find out when their birthday is. And it was an excuse for them to go interact and meet someone new in the company, which I thought was just a really, you know, simple but interesting way to connect people and sort of support that, you know, colliding with people that you wouldn't normally collide in the workplace.
Yeah, such a good point. We have found that as we look at the importance of purpose and meaning, absolutely what you're talking about is, you know, the connection of purpose and meaning to people. People get a sense of purpose when they feel like they're connected to something bigger than themselves, number one. Number two, they feel like their work matters to that something bigger. And number three, it's got to be all about people. And there's some really terrific research about people who have been sort of, you know, at the end of their lives or the close of their lives, and they are looking around saying, boy, did I spend the time that I wanted to with people? And they also say, did I get to make the contribution that I wanted to make in the world? And so we all want to work. We all want to make that contribution. But it's not a contribution to some sort of esoteric goal like growing at 15% a year. It's really always about how we affect people and thinking about how our work ladders up to that bigger picture. So I think that opportunity and the place to connect, whether we're creating policies or practices to foster connection, or whether we're creating places where we can foster connection, any of those make a really big difference. And I think that idea of bringing work and life together, I can bring my whole self to work. I can be transparent about, you know, what's going on with my children if I care to, or I can be transparent, even if I don't have children, I can be transparent about things that are going on with my family. And I feel like people care about me at work. That idea that of amplitude, right? That we don't have to kind of narrow and bring only tiny parts of ourselves to the work environment. We can bring our whole selves. And to your point, when we meet new people, when we feel connected to people, when we feel alignment between our work and their work and that greater purpose, we'll have a much greater sense of abundance and fulfillment, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, I love the term abundance, and you know, you use it to talk about the idea that there's room for work and life, which I think is, I liked the way you framed that, because I think, you know, people, sometimes we have the conversation about them just being in conflict and, you know, how to manage. And like you said, balance, and it's not really necessarily about balance. It's how do you find the view of abundance and making both of them work. What are you seeing in terms of corporations moving toward this and sort of embracing that abundance? How is that going to look over the next 5 years in terms of culture and policy?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great question. It's really important to think about. And I think it seems like corporations are moving more and more in this direction. And it seems like some of them are moving in that direction because they put people first. And I think others are moving in that direction because they realize that they have to if they're going to attract and retain. And I guess it sort of doesn't even matter what your starting point is, as long as you're moving in that direction. And the research that I highlight in the book really talks about, by focusing on people, we end up getting better results for the bottom line. So it's not like we have to choose, gee, should I put my investment in the people side of the business, or should I put my investment more toward kind of the hard elements that will drive the bottom line? Because when we do the right thing for people, we end up doing the right thing for the bottom line. So we get better engagement and better commitment. We're able to attract people and retain them and, you know, capture their hearts and capture their discretionary time. That's a really big deal. So I see that companies are going in this direction. And one of the things that I think is really important is that companies are really careful about doing as much of this as necessary and as little as possible. I talk about this in the book as the Goldilocks rule: as much as necessary, as little as possible. It's like the just right amount. So for some companies, that means a really, really comprehensive approach to work-life supports, everything from, you know, recognition programs to volunteer programs to, you know, working in alternate places and working in alternate hours and all of that. For other companies, it's a much smaller approach to work-life support, but they're still moving in that direction. So there's an oil and gas company that I've worked with in the past, and they just give people, you know, the option to take half a day off on Fridays during the summer. They have to talk about what they're going to do. They have to talk about where they're going to be. They have to report on the work that they accomplished while they were gone. So it's a very conservative approach to work-life support, but at least it's a starting point. And so I think that when we have work-life supports that we're implementing that are a really good match to the culture and that start to move the culture increasingly toward that people perspective and people focus, that ends up being a really good thing for the bottom line. And it's about kind of making the business case toward those things and managing that change for both the people and for the organization as a whole.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And I think you're right. Some are taking more baby steps than bigger steps, but it's happening. And if they put the people first, then those things will come over time. So we talked a little bit about the coffee bar as an example of kind of aligning a physical work environment in order to support work life. What are some other examples that you think are important in terms of space design?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that's really important is that place to connect, and the coffee bar is really critical. I think it's also really important to have places where people can leave materials or be inspired by artifacts in the space, space that people perceive to be inspiring and creative. So whether there's color in the space or whether there are, you know, toys or manipulatives in the space, whether there's the opportunity for people to kind of post things on the wall and manipulate ideas by manipulating paper or post-it notes or whatever. Those are really, I think those are really important because we all learn in different ways, right? By reading, by watching, by listening, sometimes by kinesthetic experiences. So that opportunity for that kind of inspiring, creative, connecting space is important. I think the other thing is that we want to make sure that the space is changing and fresh enough. So not every single day, not every single week. We don't want to blow people's minds by every time they walk into the space, they can't be sure about what will be there. But I think every now and again, if we can bring in some new artifacts or if we can arrange the space just a little bit differently, that variety keeps people engaged and keeps it fresh. And that might even be seasonally oriented. Plenty of light in the space, plenty of kind of buzz and appropriate noise in the space is important. You don't want to be in space where it feels like you showed up to the wrong party on the wrong day and you're wondering where everybody is. You want to be in space that feels like there's enough kind of energy that it's energizing to you to be in it. And of course, great opportunities for power and Wi-Fi and connections, spaces that are easy to navigate and find our way around and have sort of an inevitability to them are important. And I think the other thing, I guess the last thing I would say, and we can dig into any of these, is just a lot of variety in the space. And to me, that variety is about having enough choices in the space. And then the culture also needs to support the opportunity to make the choices, right? So if I want to work heads down, or if I want to work contemplatively, if I want to work collaboratively, if I want to work alone in public, if I want to work alone in private, if I want to be in comfy seating or more formal seating, the more we're kind of moving and changing our space based on the task we're trying to accomplish, it seems like the more productive we are. And that's one of the things that we find as we really kind of dig into effective space. So those are some of the things that I think matter as we're thinking about space that can be supportive of work life and supportive of this idea of feeling fulfilled when you're there.
I think those are really useful. And as I mentioned in our pre-recording chat, people designing shared spaces and co-working spaces, and shared spaces could be within a corporation, not just, you know, a third or fourth place to work, are really still learning about optimal design and any insights about what works best and how to support that work-life integration, I think is really, really helpful and will always remind us to be thoughtful about those things. And even things we don't consider, like you mentioned, you know, the ability to leave things on the walls, which I think is interesting for culture, contributing to others in the organization or in the space, knowing what people are working on, or maybe even contributing to it, or just the ability to sort of go back to it when you want to go back to it. And some of those things are things that are not necessarily natural for a shared space, but I think it's worth thinking about how do you create spaces where those things can happen so that you don't have this just sort of perfectly sterile environment that people walk into that's, you know, sort of a fresh board every day. But, you know, are there areas where you could leave some ongoing work? So that's just kind of one little interesting insight. And, you know, it's your, in your book, you talked about optimal density, and your example was a little bit about, well, the, there was an experiment about, picking up a pen in a sidewalk in a city and how density affects how people respond to the pen. But it made me think one of the things we struggle with in shared spaces is exactly that, that optimal density and having enough buzz to have the right amount of energy, but not having too much of it so that people can't get work done. And it's a struggle. I was actually speaking to another co-working space operator about that this week. He had just opened a second space and said, you know, his first space, he realizing, you know, might be almost a little over the top on the buzz factor. And his new space, he feels in contrast, is really quite quiet. And he's trying to figure out sort of, you know, what drives that and what do you do about it? Do you have any, like, if you find yourself in a space that's not quite optimal on the buzz factor, you know, what are, how do you figure out what might be driving that? And are there any sort of simple steps to move towards balancing it out?
Yeah, that is always the challenge, right? Especially in shared spaces and co-working spaces, because you can't always predict when people are going to show up and how long they're going to be there and whether they're going to be working more contemplatively or more collaboratively. I think, you know, one of the things that is kind of cool that I've heard about in shared spaces is a trend toward coordinating your schedules, right? So if you know that you want to work with a couple of key people, then making sure that you're both there on the same days during the same times, even if you don't need complete overlap of the tasks that you're focused on, you know those people are going to be in the space when you're in the space, because sometimes your experience of optimal density has everything to do with who's there, not just how many people are there. And so I think it's building that community of people when they're there. So I think one is, if the space is really quiet and there aren't that many people there, it will feel fuller if I know the people and if I feel like I've got good relationships and I understand how I can learn from them and how they can learn from me. And so that's within the purview of the leader of that co-working space or shared space to set those communities. I think the same is true if we get into a situation where we've got incredible amounts of density and you sort of look around and say, oh my goodness, we're running out of space today. A lot of times spaces feel uncomfortably dense if everyone is a stranger. But I think if we've built community to the extent that people want in a shared space, then sometimes that makes the density feel a little bit more manageable. And I think it's all about choice. Some people want to go to a co-working space and have a little bit of interaction. Some people want a lot. So it's always about giving options for people, of course, and not imposing too much socialization on people. But I think that building of community is one way to help in terms of that density factor, and then just other creative ways of coordinating schedules with people so that you know you're all going to be there together when you want to be there together. And you start to learn patterns of people too, like who tends to show up on which kinds of days or on what kinds of time frames, whether you're in a public co-working space or even in a corporation shared space, you start to feel those rhythms and you can start to see people kind of showing up together.
I think that's a really interesting insight, and I can think of a few examples of that in my own experience, and I think probably other folks can too. So the idea that density can be related to the relationships that you have in the space, and I think that plays really well into the kind of what co-working spaces try to do with community building. And I'm thinking in the future there will probably be some technology solutions that can sort of support that coordination as well. So yeah, thank you for that. It was a sort of a tricky question that I didn't know, you know, might be a tough answer, but that was actually a really helpful insight.
Yeah, and I think the other really interesting trend is all the quantification of the work environment in all kinds of work environments, right? Like we're able to monitor how many people come through the door, where they're sitting. We even have, you know, monitors that can monitor who they're talking to and how much they're interacting. And so I think that we talked previously about what's happening in the next 5 years. I think that's another big one that's coming in the next 5 years, is this quantification and understanding of usage of the office. And then I think that outgrowth of that is going to be incredible customization and choices and control. role. So I'll be able to, you know, walk up to a workstation and it will respond to me. It will know who I am. It will know what height I want the workstation at. It will know what number should be programmed into the phone for me. It will know who I want to talk to, and it will give me a display of, you know, whether those people are in my area from a proxemic standpoint. So I think that quantification, to your point, there'll be a lot of technology that probably helps us with some of that optimal density in the future as well.
Yeah. So many exciting things going on and coming our way. I love the opportunities that are ahead to improve our efforts to integrate work life. So I appreciate your time in answering all these questions and giving some insights. If you're curious about Tracy's book and her work, definitely check out her book, Bring Work to Life by Bringing Life to Work. A guide for leaders and organizations. And you can find that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and IndieBound. And like I said, we'll include links to the title and where you can buy it online in the show notes. And also in the show notes, we'll include some of the highlights of my conversation with Tracy. So Tracy, thank you so much again for sharing your time and your insights. This was really helpful for me and I think for the audience. So I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's been a terrific and interesting conversation. We've gone in some fun directions, so I appreciate the time.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.